Наша дискуссия будет на английском. And welcome to this interesting discussion. We have Martina here and Megan Donner here, and I think everyone knows who is Martina. But how will you introduce yourself?
I'm a designer.
Thank you. So this is Martina, a designer, and I want to thank Martina for this wonderful opportunity to make this discussion.
My pleasure.
And the invitation to be right here in the center of Martina Live Studio. And this is Megan Donahue from Microsoft. Can you introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm a design PM in the Windows Phone design team in Microsoft.
Thank you, and thank you very much for coming to Russia.
You're welcome.
It's
my pleasure.
To this trip.
I'm really excited about being here.
My name is Mikhail Chernomorikov. I'm from Microsoft Russia, and I will try to be a moderator in this discussion. But first of all, let's try to start with a moment of silence, because today, you know, Steve Jobs has gone, and it was a big person in the industry for all my life. Okay. I believe this discussion will be interactive, and if you and the audience want to ask any questions, please do it with Twitter. Our hashtag is TemaMetro, or TemaMetro, if you wish. Just put it in the tweet, and I will monitor that from time to time, and will ask the most interesting questions, the most popular ones. And let's start the discussion in general about design. Why are you designers? Why did you select to be a designer to be part of this industry?
So maybe you go first.
Me. I think for me personally, part of what's so exciting about design is it's kind of your opportunity to connect with people and building objects and products and images and whatever it might be is sort of a really powerful tool to express emotion and express, you know, a point of view. And, you know, it's sort of by working in design, particularly in the technology space, I find it particularly, you know, very resonant with the things that I love, which is sort of this balance between everything artistic and organic and everything very logical and rational, and how do you reconcile the two and make something that could be seen as very austere and cold feel personal and something you can connect to.
That's very inspiring. I'm a designer because I cannot do anything else, and that's the only thing I do, and nobody punishes me for doing what I do. So it's the way of least resistance finding.
It was a lot of question about the name of Metro Design.
Yes.
Which I came up with right now. And first of all, let's ask you, Megan, about that. Why is that Metro?
Sure. Well, the visual language that we chose for our operating system was actually inspired very heavily by transportation and wayfinding. The visual language that you see, for example, when you're in train stations and airports and you know, other places where there's a very specific thing you're trying to do and get to quickly. And the power of the signs that are in, you know, those types of places like airports and train stations is that they need to be universally understood and very independent of region or nationality or language, because the people still need to get to where they're going. And so sort of embracing that visual language and style and really thinking through, you know, the usability of very simple graphic forms that you find in airports. that's really the heart of the Metro kind of visual language for us, and that's where the name came from.
Bertini, what do you think about this name, and do you know any other names for design, like sectional design or part design for particular companies? Maybe you have your own name for design wire to make a little bit.
We're speaking about the Windows Phone, right?
Yeah.
So, was I thinking about the name Metro? I don't think that the name is something to discuss because it's not important. Because I know Symbian, I know iPhone, I know some other old and new systems, but it really doesn't matter how they're called. But what matters is what you see on the screen and how you interact with the device and what you actually get as an experience. I do have iPhone. I was not like the early adopter because the early iPhone I consider to be useless, and only when Apple opens the App Store, some sense started to appear, just like with the iPod, because only when iTunes appeared, the iPod was starting to make some sense. Even before that, it was just another MP3 player nobody cared about. So, speaking of two environments, I think that the Metro is, and this is something I really want to find out today, speaking with you, is what was behind the thinking of creating this system? Because for me, the first impression, of course, is very simple, that's crap. So I think most, like 90% of people would take up the phone, click a couple of times, and give it back saying it's crap. But this is not something we want to spend our time today discussing, because actually this is a device where a lot of thinking went in, a lot of creative talent was involved, a lot of people were thinking and developing it and envisioning the future and the use of that. And also, what interested me more is how people involved in this project were doing the work that's done, knowing that there is iPhone existing with us so much, so large and user base and so many success stories and so many loyal customers and so natural interface that a lot of ideas are actually borrowed from iPhone because you cannot ignore that, just like the mouse. You may not create any computer without a desktop computer, without a mouse in the 90s, and you cannot ignore the gestures and touch screens. 21st century. So, what people were thinking when they were developing this interface, especially because I have an impression that designers were trying to avoid things that were too much like iPhone. They were trying to make something completely different just for the sake of being different. Can you comment on this?
Sure. I mean, I think that's a misconception around, you know, we weren't intentionally doing it just to be different for the sake of being different. I mean, the goal with any, you know, design is that you want to make something that's desirable and that you can connect with and that you find, you know, can become part of yourself. You know, but Microsoft at the time had been, you know, building mobile interfaces that were not being met with that sense of passion and emotional connection and excitement. And, you know, the thing that's really powerful and exciting about when the iPhone entered the market is because it changed the game of mobile computing, and it really showed that you can create new user interfaces, that you can take risks, and you can have, you know, challenge what's been widely accepted as the norm, and play around with that and have fun with it and find alternate ways to do things that you once took for granted. And so, you know, drawing inspiration from that, we looked at, you know, a visual language that was unique and really took inspiration from graphic design, and really going back to the roots of things that drew us in as designers, you know, through visual languages and layouts and typography. But then also looking at the mobile space and trying to make sure that whatever we did was also something that users could easily pick up and find intuitive and find natural. And not just copying what the iPhone did. You know, there's lots of products out there that are, you know, iPhone wannabes. And we don't need more of those on the market, you know, but we could have built that. Sure, it would have been cheap and easy for our team to do, but that wouldn't have been helpful for the, you know, fostering innovation, fostering, you know, kind of the next generation of mobile devices. And what does a smartphone mean for the everyday user beyond just sort of a niche product?
Does it mean that people working on Metro interface were thinking that someday Metro would win over iPhone?
I don't know if we explicitly said we must beat the iPhone. You know, I think that there's, what's really exciting is by having competing products, you can have, I think that it forces people to really make smarter decisions and to be innovative and to, you know, be more thoughtful around how they approach evolving their products. And, you know, I think a world with just one of everything is a really boring place to be. There's so many types of personalities in the world, and things that attract, you know, me to something won't be the same things that attract somebody else. And just recognizing that there's diversity amongst us, and it's good to have different choices, and it's good to kind of make people question and think and to provide an evocative reaction. I think that that's exciting, and we should, you know, as a designer, I find that, you know, really core of what makes design so enticing. You know, you're not just drawing pictures all day, but you're trying to evoke emotion and thought. So
I think most viewers never experienced measuring the pace. So basically, it's about movement up and down and right and left. So this is the main interaction idea, and also the second major idea is why the interface is called metro, is because it's based on navigation systems from metros and airports and transportation systems and so on. So that's why it's heavily based on typography, and the use of icons is really limited. To at least in most of the cases where you would expect an icon, you just see some text. And the idea behind that is that good typography is good for navigation, and you read a lot of text while using the phone. But of course, the developers will be thinking something on their own, and of course, many applications will be just ported directly without paying attention to the interface idea, just ignoring completely all the guidelines. And I doubt that Microsoft will be as tyrannic as Apple in rejecting the apps. I think they would accept just any stuff, because just for the sake of being enlarging the application base, at least initially. That's my thinking. And this may be hard for developers to see how people ignore their thinking, because this is a completely new environment. And I've used it for a couple of days, and for me it was like strange, because sometimes I expect it to behave as one way, but it was behaving another way. So there are some things I want to ask you about the ideas behind, just because I could not explain it to myself. Why is it like that? I'm not asking about why everything is based on typography. This is an idea, and this is a huge direction that was not explored as largely.
Well, to clarify too, the design is not solely based on typography. Mm-hmm. You know, type as a visual and graphical element is certainly core, but it's also the design is focused around directly interacting with your content and letting content rule the day, so that you don't need tools to manipulate and interact with your content. It can just be there and you can have it and interact with it directly. So it's a combination of embracing that notion of direct manipulation of your stuff, versus and typography and sort of all the elements of the animations and the motion and bringing things to life in a kind of fluid way as a set. So we have about five principles that we adhere to. You know, we care a lot about in the team that, you know, define Metro to us. And, you know, it's around cleanliness and fierce reduction of elements. It's around embracing typography. It's around embracing your motion and making things feel alive and animated. It's about, you know, content being at the forefront of all of your designs. And then the last one is really around being authentic to the form and the medium, being digital, you know, and not trying to replicate real world objects all the time.
Yes.
You know, the early computer interfaces did that, you know, I think out of necessity, because computers were new in general. People didn't understand what they were, how they could be useful, and it was easy to help connect people to this new motion of something being digital by making it very familiar and modeling the idea off something very real and tangible. But I think that we have moved beyond that now, and that a digital life and a digital self is very, you know, widely accepted as the norm now. And so kind of revisiting what that means and how do we be authentic to that space.
Okay, so my first question will be about the Metro interface. Why is it based on something, if you say that you were trying to avoid real life metaphors, because you were trying to create some digital metaphors, why is it based on navigation, on Metro navigation, so subway and airport?
Yeah, it's the spirit of being universally understood and being efficient. You know, the idea that you can help a user do the thing they need to do, but then just get out of the way. You know, when you're traveling, it's all around like that just-in-time moment where you need to just figure out like how to get to that next terminal so you don't miss your flight. And if the signage really, you know, was overly ornate, it would help. It would probably hinder your ability to, you know, conceptualize that data. And there's regional differences too. So
my impression is that most subway and airport navigation systems are a complete mess, and most people don't get them, and they always ask security because people don't trust the arrows. And sometimes when you are guided by the sign, you just end up in some cute sign. You
seems a little extreme.
Not where you were expecting.
I don't know. I've traveled to a lot of places in my life. Yes, they take adjustments. You know, no metro sign is the same, mm-hmm. and that's something that I think is kind of interesting. Is that ideally you would say, okay, throughout the world we all use the exact same visual language, mm-hmm. but that's not possible to do. You know, there's different countries, there's different owners, there's different needs that are born out of that. But at the same time, you can figure them out. They sort of go back to sort of the heart and soul of, of maps.
You may figure them out, but this is always, like, for me, any metaphor on which it is based, mm-hmm. is something deeply rooted in people's perceivement of how the world looks like and how it operates. Mm-hmm. So all airport navigation systems are the most like unhuman as you can get while not trying to speak with people directly. You just say, okay, I'm tired of you all, and just read this letter, and just read this number, and just go that way, don't bother me. So most of the navigation systems, they do have this flow built in, and all of the like floor maps and all of the codings are absolutely unhuman. And I see some of that stuff here, because while trying to work with this environment, I could not build a mental model that I would remember. I don't have I do understand the metaphor, but my mental model is my special spatial model. It's not working. I cannot remember where I started. I cannot remember where is the entrance. I cannot remember how to like make a circle and go back to the same place where I was before, because I have really a lot of text which I can read fast. But when I scroll it, it becomes just a gray mess, and I have no point of no anchor that I can used to find my way around, and I have to maybe go back to the mainstream, which is very low density in terms of information. It has like maybe 6 big icons. I'm used to like 12 icons or maybe 20, and I can read. I do think that displays may show more information more densely than on this device. So for me, the two main problems is that I don't understand where am I presently.
Okay.
So that's why I have to use to remember that I use the home right. icon just to start again. And also, I do understand where am I when I am directly on some inner page or in some remote room in this environment. So did you experience this kind of like misunderstanding while testing?
You know, I think some of the early designs we did certainly struggled with getting the navigation model to work, but part of that was born out of the experiences that were on the device not following some basic rules. So it can be easy to get disoriented if either you are inconsistent, and so the users can't habituate to a specific method in the phone, or think of a good way to explain this. You know, we didn't 100% base Metro off of purely transportation graphics. You know, if we had done that, you would never see the layers and the animation and the background imagery. You know, it's a balance of that as a source of inspiration in terms of hitting usability goals and being able to be efficient when you are setting out to accomplish tasks, but also understanding that, you know, our world is rich and it's dynamic, and there's a time and a place for efficiency, but there's also a time and a place for something more exploratory and fun about our phones. I mean, we take them with us everywhere, and there are moments when you need to just kill time and you want to be able to get lost and immerse yourself in the experiences. And so we tried to create a system that allowed a little bit of both. You know, the panoramas are designed to be really immersive and really help you get drawn into the content and just explore and play and have fun. But the more like rigorous pivot structures in the list-based system is to be there to help you accomplish specific tasks and to find the thing you need. but it should be things you care about, and it should represent that content in its form, you know? That's why it's not just about type. If you're trying to display something that's more than type, you should show that in the UI, and I think app developers should embrace that. It's part of a challenge when they go to create an application for Windows Phone is to, you know, move away from just thinking about lists and words and lists, but what is it that their list is representing to the user, and how do you help make it come alive? So, I don't know if I'm answering your question specifically. Is there... Because you asked me a lot of questions all at once.
Yeah.
So, is there a specific one you'd like me to
just keep on
some more?
Okay. Another thing that I just didn't get, maybe I'm also getting it wrong, mm-hmm. is that in different situations, on different screens, in different mm-hmm. settings, a word can be a button or it can be just a word.
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't understand how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But when I switched the phone initially, mm-hmm. it asked me which language I want to use, the main language.
Okay.
And I chose English.
Okay.
And nothing happened. Because after looking at the screen, I saw that there is a button, like accept, mm-hmm. on the bottom of the screen. So why is that? Why can I just press the English and have it?
I'm not sure which screen you're referring to. Some of the language screens let you choose multiple things. So if there's actually the ability to choose a few choices, I'm not sure exactly what screen you're referring
to. Well, I just like trying to interact when I press the word and it's interactive. It uh-huh. like turns orange or something.
Okay.
That means that the word heard me and
right.
It knows I'm calling it.
Right.
But nothing happened because I had to confirm the function with a
okay.
button. And then the same thing in some settings when I was trying to change the system language,
mm-hmm.
I pressed some of the settings and I just
yeah.
returned to the main screen.
The language settings specifically are tricky
changed.
Because
I
they
come back and then
well,
realizing there was some inscription underlined saying that you have to press here and the device will have to restart.
Yeah, and that's what I was talking about. The language settings in particular are tricky because you do have to reboot the phone in order for them to take effect, which is unfortunate, but I won't get diverged into technical implementation details.
It just didn't ask me. It gave me no like
yeah,
no dialogue or something like making me pay attention to.
No, it's good to get this kind of feedback when we first. You know, our team is actually quite small, and you know we have to basically spend our energy and our time focusing on the most important aspects
and
of the
phone. Everybody speaks English, so we don't have to change.
Right, the first exactly, and that's unfortunate to say, but it's true. You know, we're an American-based company, but the thing that's changing in our team now is that we are trying to make this product a worldwide product, and there's a shift happening with our group of being more aware and sensitive to the pain points and the needs of users that are not based out of North America. And you know, this is some of the earliest launches in those countries, and hearing the feedback around like what's working and what's not, like we'd love to hear that stuff because we're a very iterative group and we want to continue to refine things and make it really awesome. So, you know, did we spend as much time as we probably should have designing the language picker? Probably not, because we were trying to redesign the entire operating system.
But it just works differently from the metaphor, because everybody is now used to clicking into the object that they want to
yeah, and
interact.
The way our picker system was designed was that if you're just doing a single choice, it should just react and select it. So that's why I'm not exactly sure what screen you're referring to, because if they use our controls, which our first-party team should have been doing, when you have a single selection list, you should tap on it and it should just select
yeah.
and go. And
you wouldn't need to confirm it
unless...
Most expected.
Right. So that our guidance to all the teams has always been, you know, oh, what you see is what you get model. Make the change take effect immediately unless there's a specific reason why it cannot. So it's, I don't know, language one may have just slipped through the cracks or something around.
Yeah, so 99 times out of 100, the object is interactive, but
right.
one 1% is just it's not. And since I already had those 99 times, I'm not expecting to be behaving
differently.
That's
totally fair.
So another thing that's maybe you can shed some light on
okay.
is why there are three like hardware buttons
sure.
on the screen.
I can shed light on all of them. Actually,
why not then make them software?
So the main reason not to make them software is because they're, particularly for the start button and for the back button, they're universal navigation that we are employing throughout the whole phone. And so when we sat out, you know, and looked at the system, we're like, well, if every application in the product is going to be needing to move backwards or to go back to start, why waste the screen space with these buttons. And so moving them into the hardware, there's a couple things that are really powerful about that. One, it frees up room on the screen for your stuff, for your content, for whatever it is you're interacting with. Another is that it makes the navigation be consistent, and so you can develop muscle memory as a user. You know that you can always hit those buttons and that should behave, behave in a predictable manner. Yeah, I mean, those are the two most important points, is to free up the space on the screen and to make sure that the user can individually. Yeah, there was something else I wanted to say about the buttons.
Probably that there are some models that have hardware buttons as well, so it's self-limited.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, the back button is interesting. I think that I was really curious after I was, you know, I had been on an iPhone myself for many years before I came and worked at Microsoft. And when I started to interact with our system, I actually found my, and then if I would go back to my old iPhone, I found myself missing the back button a lot. Like, there's something really awesome about, like, oh, shoot, I didn't mean to do that one thing. You can just hit back and you're there. And it's strange, like, it's interesting to hear as a new person using the phone the pain points you're feeling because of the stuff you're accustomed to from a previous device.
Yeah, probably the strangest
thing. Challenge I would say is if you live on it for a few weeks and then go back,
maybe.
You know, where do you notice different pain points before? And you might start to notice stuff about your current devices that you're like, wait a minute, why does it work that way? That's actually quite frustrating for me.
For me, what was unnatural is that I've already done all the things on the screen. I can tap everywhere, interact with every object, and at some point I want to go back. Mm-hmm. I'm searching for the back button.
Mm-hmm.
I don't realize that it's behind the screen because my like all the field of vision is only the screen. I don't think that there is anything else somewhere.
Right.
So for me it was like, oh, there is a button. Yeah.
How much of that is just because that's what you're used to?
I don't know.
You know, I why would back only be the one that makes you have that pause?
I probably would answer this question in 2 weeks. Maybe if I get used to the back button, maybe I would miss it on my iPhone. I don't know that.
Right.
But another strange thing is some confirmation buttons. They look like they were thought of in some last minute, like in SMS, you cannot just press enter to send SMS. You really don't have a visible send button. But there are some small cryptic pictograms in the bottom of the screen that are very close to each other.
Are you referring to
with my thumb the delete
button and the enter button?
Yeah. And the send button it doesn't look like a send button. It doesn't look like something to accomplish my task.
Yeah.
And it's pretty small. I have fingers like a bus driver, so I really press two buttons at a time.
Yeah, well, in certain places in the UI, the enter button will actually hit send. And we tried to be smart about when does it make sense and when is it appropriate to do that, because you don't want to take away from the user's ability to put a carriage return in. So depending on the task at hand.
Yeah, but that means that I have to remember several behaviors for the same element.
Well, we tend to be pretty consistent in terms of if there's a primary task that we need a user to accomplish, we're going to put it in the app bar. And that's what the app bar is designed for, is that there's 1 to 4 main functions that you need to be able to do all the time, that you do in a very frequent manner, should be in the app bar. And the rest of the stuff shouldn't be. You know, we can put it in the application menu or just not even have it if you don't really need it. That is that guidance to the team, is use the app bar as your means to accomplish the primary tasks. And then if you want to augment that with special sort of shortcuts in places where it makes sense. So for example, in some cases, I think in the browser, if you're typing an address in the address bar and you hit enter, in that case, it will submit it and try to go hit that website. Because in those cases, you're not typing a multi-lined paragraph. And so it's okay to have a shortcut there where you're in your typing and you can.
Maybe you don't miss that if you have a really visible send button. Because you know that send is send, and CR is just a carriage return, you just you like you don't think that. But when you don't see any invisible send button, you assume that enter is enter. Okay. You just enter the information, but it's not goes to the next line. So in terms of consistency, this is something that several times I was finding myself to be in some inconsistent situation.
Okay.
Because I was already learning from the device that it behaves a certain way, but mm-hmm. it was like teaching me every time it was inventing something new, saying like a bad instructor when you want to get your driver's license and the instructor doesn't want to give you one. So they will always think of some excuse for not giving you driver's license. It's like always, oh, you didn't know that rule, so we will punish you come here next time. So sometimes I had this feeling from the device. And also another thing that I noticed is why in 2012 mm-hmm. almost, you do have modal dialogues, you do have dialogues occupying whole screen saying that something happened and you have to press OK. Why not just doing the same thing in some other way that people are already familiar with?
Like it's a philosophical debate.
You have Facebook, Twitter, all kind of notifications, everybody thinking about them. Why do they have to really occupy your attention so much?
Yeah, our notification systems, like the colored bars that come across the top, we wanted to reserve for personal communication. So. You know, things that the users those only stay up on the screen for a brief amount of time. They tend to be more like information flows coming in. These dialogues are, you know, very specific to the task you're trying to do. You know, whether dialogues.
But everything is specific to the task you're trying to do.
No, not always. If you can get a notification in, that might not be related to what you're doing.
The screen may just beep at you or blink and say that I have no information to work with. Here we have endpoint not found and the close button. Why should I spend my time pressing this button? Okay, you didn't find my endpoint. Like, give me some other choice.
There's lots of ways you can do it. You can put a giant red exclamation point and a frowny face on it too. But you know,
maybe I just made a typo and I don't want to. I don't want to be at a special screen showing that. I just want to like delete the last letter and print another one. I can do that.
Is that a real scenario where you had to go that round of the dialogue?
Yeah, I may
miss that. Show it to me and I can go talk to the team that built it. you know, you're asking Microsofties to give up dialogues. I mean, we tried to start fresh, but at the end of the day, there's still Microsoft engineers building this product and they love their dialogues. So I can do my best to go fight and bring the dialogues down, but, you know, our team is a centralized design team, and we're there to give guidance and vision to the larger engineering group. But we don't write the code at the end of the day to control all the functionality.
Is it something religious for the dialogues?
What's that?
Is it something religious for the dialogues?
Religious.
Is it something you have to
do? You know, you think about adjustments to the new interface that you as a user are making. You can imagine that if you come from a world of engineering where you're used to coding a particular way mm-hmm. and having to design an interface that's different, there's going to be adjustments that even the engineering teams are going to have to make. Because it's different, you know? We know
well,
that.
In this particular case, so. I'm in the Mac application.
Okay.
And I have the IBM flashing. Mm-hmm. And I just press enter.
Right.
And I just use this dialog.
Okay.
I did not enter anything, mm-hmm. and
the system
actually knows that I did not enter anything.
I know, and it's just telling you that, like, hey,
you not found, of course, because I didn't enter anything. So okay. why in first place giving me press?
That's a good question.
It could be disabled until I press anything, meaningful, and then you may say that okay, we don't know what that is.
So I do not disagree with you.
There is something mysterious about this. Model dialogues because they really it's like you cannot live your day if you don't read hundreds of them.
I think that's an exaggeration. There's not hundreds of modal dialogues in the
depends
system,
on how
but
you click anywhere.
Sure, if you click the button over and over, you'll
like it's like the message. Okay, there is no paper in the printer. Okay? I don't want it to occupy all of my screen. Okay, there is no paper, so this message may be somewhere in the corner of my screen. When I need something from the printer, I will just add some paper. I don't want my whole life to be stopped by this announcement.
Yeah.
Just like here.
So I absolutely hear you, and I'm not disagreeing with you. It comes down to a matter of practicality on our team. So there's usability guidelines that we believe in, and you know, not interrupting a flow is one of those, and being you know, clear about messaging. And in that scenario, if there's if your flow is to fill out the dialogue or the direction information, and you accidentally hit the enter button, if it's that not a meaningful dialogue to bring up and help the user move forward on, then it probably is redundant and unnecessary. And I don't disagree with that. You know, I can talk to the team that makes that, but you know, we are a large group and we have a variety of folks writing.
Sure,
and it sucks to hear that. You know, yes, that's how the sausage is made, but it's the reality of Microsoft, and you know, we. We'll continue to refine the product, and I think that's something that's really exciting about it is that it is a very early first generation version of an operating system. And the first time Windows came out, it wasn't perfect, and they evolved it over years, and it's still not perfect, and they'll keep evolving over years. And you need to sort of approach the same mentality with the Windows Phone operating system.
Okay, so tell me, I accept this explanation about the early version, and my question is about. Mixing the experience that, that was gained from this project and from this team with desktop Windows.
Yeah.
How much do you influence each other? How much desktop Windows influence you and how much you influence them? Do people talk to each other?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, there are different design studios within each of the major functional groups in Microsoft. So the Windows Phone design team is not the same as the Windows design team, is not the same as the Connect design team, is not the same as you know, Office. But what we're working on doing in Microsoft is building a more centralized design culture, and how you grow that notion in a very corporate place, and how do you make sure that these teams connect and have conversations and, you know, work towards a unified vision for their family of products. Historically, Microsoft has not been very good at that. You know, they weren't set up to be a design-led business. They were very build it from the ground up kind of approach to their product work. So it's a new notion to take designers that were once individually embedded through a whole lot of teams and centralize them in studios, and then help that influence the product in a really meaningful and user-driven manner. I think that's starting to happen, which is really awesome. And I think the next phase for us is going to be, okay, now that we're getting these pockets of design, how do we connect them and have a better unified story for Microsoft as a whole? And it's getting a lot better, and we're seeing that, you know, through the evolvement of the Xbox interface, through the evolvement of the Windows interface, and I think it'll continue to, you know, get tighter and more collaborative, and we just gotta, you know, it takes time.
But with this project with the Windows Phone, did designers have a chance to have a fresh start and do something, something that was not previously possible in Microsoft?
Yeah, I think that they did. You know, I was pretty new when, or in general, I'm pretty new to Microsoft. I joined 2.5 years ago, which was right when they reset the whole process for Windows Mobile. So there had been work being done on a mobile interface that, you know, to our leadership team's credit, they recognized was not going to be successful. And they said, you know what, if we even want to continue fooling ourselves about being competitive in this space, we need to go back to our roots and understand how to make a product that people care about and will want to use. And so probably, you know, I don't know all the history of Microsoft, but probably for the first time in recent history, they reset a project and enabled the design team to take the reins and really lead through a user-centered approach. And so the designers at the time had kind of, you know, some had been working on the Zune HD interface, and some had worked on Media Center, and some had worked on other products throughout Microsoft. And they'd been talking to one another, and I think that they were finding things, you know, they felt excited about, but they weren't really necessarily given the forum in which to start from scratch and build this product that they really passionately believed in. And so when this reset did occur, which was, you know, a really great opportunity for them to go off and figure out what that was and put a stake in the ground and say, let's take a risk, let's, you know, try something new, and let's challenge the pre-existing notions of what an interface is supposed to be.
And is there anything that was discovered during the design and building process that surprised everybody, and that was a discovery about human nature or the way people interact with devices or people want from the mobile gadgets that was not previously known.
Acknowledged or appreciated. Within the world all up or within Microsoft specifically?
Oh, within the group. That's something that some knowledge that just enlightened everybody and people, this is the way people are. Before the invention of the mobile phones, nobody knew that a thumb could be as operational.
Yeah, I think that
nature gave us the thumb, but we didn't use it.
There was any one aha moment of this is the thing that, wow, why didn't we think of this before? But I do think there's a lot of small, adjustments to how the teams thought about UI that happened over the course of the product cycle. So, we have a usability team embedded in our studio, and the researchers are really awesome at collecting data from studies done from Microsoft Research as a whole, which looks at long-term visions around natural user interfaces and gestures and human-computer interaction forms and lots of varying sciences around usability. And they synthesize that, and then they run specific studies for Windows Phone based on concepts and ideas that we want to potentially implement, and they help us really refine the design ideas that we have in mind. And there are, a lot of times, the findings come out very positively, but a lot of times they came out very negatively, and we had to really go back to the drawing board and fix a design that we thought was going to be a no-brainer, slam dunk, of course the user is going to get that, and then you put it in a lab, and all of them are thinking this doesn't work at all the way I expected it to. And so, that's why we have the team in our studio, is to try to keep us honest in that regard and not assume that design always knows the answer. Because, we try to know the answers, but sometimes you just, you can't predict how the user will react.
Yeah, I'm just sorry to interrupt this conversation. Actually, it's so much good comments about that. This is so interesting to see that some people agree with one opinion and you have a complete disagreement with that. And so several simple questions to both of you. One from Tutu Naritemi, it's a very common question. How long did you use this device and this interface?
How long?
Yes.
For 2 days.
For 2 days.
Yeah. I did not have a chance I did have a chance previously and designed the Yandex search engine for Windows Phone, but I did not have it in my pocket.
Yeah, actually the second question to you was about the Yandex. So you designed the Yandex client for Windows Phone.
Yeah.
So
Chrome Orange.
So can you just describe it shortly? How was it? Is it difficult to not to start as a project in new design?
Well, it's not very different than we tried to stick to guidelines, because there are a lot of applications that just ignore all the guidelines from the start, just not reading them. Just if the code works, developers are fine with that. But we've tried to do something that was very natural to the system. Because when we create iPhone apps, we try to do them as Apple would do that, without any design inventions and some decoration, just for the sake of decoration. So the same thing with Windows Phone. We created the app that would be just as Microsoft would do that, to the best of our understanding.
And actually, right now, it's a very popular application on the market.
It's about the only one there is, I think, in the Russian market.
And it's
really useful, because people cannot live without Yandex. So, yes, that's natural.
The question was to Megan about the impression of this design in the United States, because it's always an American company. So people are asking, how is it? What people think when they discuss it with you in the States, or maybe other countries. So is there any difference in impression with the design in Russia here and in the best part of the world?
The reactions have been really positive across the board in terms of people being really refreshed by having a new approach to mobile phones and having a competitor on the market that's different and feels unique. I think people really resonate with having choice, and they like that we gave them the ability to have choice again in the mobile space. And then there's a lot of appreciation for the attention to detail around the visual language and trying to embrace design fundamentals around typography and that sort of thing. Was it perfect out of the gate? I'm sure, there's things that you can pick apart about it, but the fact that we did it was really refreshing for people. So the reactions have been very positive. I think our biggest challenge right now is just getting the word out and getting it into the minds of the everyday user. You know, marketing messages have not been, we haven't blown out of the water, like everybody go buy a Windows phone. And part of that was intentional because as we roll out the first release, you know, you need to sort of get the kinks out a little bit before you go whole hog. So, you know, time will tell over the next couple of years. But I think we're really excited worldwide about the idea of releasing products in other countries. And, you know, there's some really strong partnerships that are being forged with some of our manufacturing partners. So I think over the next year or so, we'll see some really cool and exciting innovation, not just, you know, in software and apps, but also within the hardware devices themselves that will hopefully entice folks to use.
And it was some awards for design last week or so. Is it
yes. Yeah, we were awarded several awards at the IDSA awards, and I'm trying to remember the exact categories.
It was People's Choice.
Yeah, there was People's Choice. We got a gold award for interaction, and there was one other one. My team's gonna kill me for not remembering what they were. But a big group of folks went down to accept the awards. So,
another question that resonates with your question to Megan about the interface not only for the phone, but in general, people are asking, what do you think about keeping the idea of interfaces for smartphones to other parts of our life? Maybe not only digital, but real life, maybe industry design. Is it possible to use techniques and principles of smartphone design in other parts of our life?
I think yes, because when people started to design for smartphones, and especially for, it's not correct to call them smartphones, because iPod Touch is also a smartphone in every meaning, but it just doesn't have a SIM card. Touch interface is the future, of course, because from the production point of view, it's very cheap. You don't have any moving parts, and you have nothing to repair, and it's very easy to produce. And once you've invested into mathematics, you can just deliver something without any additional spending. And you don't have to build repair houses in every city, because you just don't have to spend time for the mechanical stuff that was previously required. And of course, this since so many efforts and so much money were spent developing these interfaces and principles, I think that will be appearing just everywhere. Like people will be using gestures to indicate a floor you want in the living, because they will be universally developed in some way. Coming 10 years, people will get used to like scrolling with two fingers or pinching for Zoom or so on. So all these things will be so natural, just like everybody knows how to use the mouse. You cannot find a person who would stare at an object without knowing what to do with that. Everybody knows how to move the pointer. The same thing will be for touch interfaces. Everybody will know how to use their fingers to achieve at least some simple set of goals. Maybe not everybody will be able to create new check-in place for Foursquare with a finger, but at least everybody will be able to point the needed floor without any effort. It will be natural. So, but this will be the main achievement from my point of view.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, there's certainly the conversation that touch will be the future because it's cheap, but I think that
it's already cheap.
But it's more than that. Like, there's a lot of things you can build that are cheap, but it doesn't mean they're nice to use. And I think that's something that's really powerful about these touch, you know, the capacitive touch interface is that it actually feels good when you're using it. You know, it's smooth and it's fluid, and people connect with it in that way. And the same reason that gestures are so exciting for folks is because you can free yourself from having to be attached to a mouse and get MRI in your hand. You can just express yourself in the way that we do as humans. You know, we talk and use our hands and we move and we dance. And why shouldn't our devices be able to respond to that? You know, if it was just about being cheap, you know, I don't think it would be as popular as it is. But, you know, I think long term, you're going to definitely see an explosion in touch across the board. I think other methods of input that are more natural will start to also emerge and be more widespread. Voice and gestures and those types of things too.
And by the way, do you believe in voice? What do you think of Siri?
Of what?
The Siri?
the city?
The system that was presented 2 days ago for the new iPhone.
Oh, I don't know.
Voice recognition, that you say, like, what's the weather today for like Istanbul, and you just answer.
Yeah, we have a voice recognition system on the Windows phone too.
Well, that one looks more superior. It's like more advanced.
Who's there?
The ones with the new iPhone.
Oh, I haven't honestly paid attention to the specs on it. But we.
So it's just as smart as some secretaries are.
I'm not going to make a comment about secretaries. I'll offend somebody. Voices, you know, I think there's a time and a place for a voice. Will everybody use it as their primary input method? I doubt it, because when you're walking down the street, people can feel like an asshole if you're talking to yourself. You know, people don't want to feel that way. There's a self-consciousness about using their speech that I don't think will become widespread. That said, I think there's an absolute time and place for it, you know, particularly in some distracted use scenarios. For example, when you're driving, we have on our phone, you can have the phone read to you text messages that you get while you're driving, and then you can reply back to the voice commands, and so it'll be like text message from so-and-so, and it reads out the message and it asks you, do you want to reply or not? And you can say yes, reply, and then you can speak back your message, and it will, you know, translate it into text and send it off.
Did you try any real life tests for that? What distracts people more? Actual typing of SMS?
It's the actual typing. It's taking themselves off the road. The purists would say you should do nothing but drive. But the reality is, we're driving, we've got music on, you know, usually if there's a person in the car, you're talking to them. And certainly, you are putting yourselves at risk by being even the slightest bit distracted, so I don't condone doing anything but driving. That said, you know, I think that by taking your eyes off the road to type, that's where the danger really comes in, because so quickly can something happen when you're not looking up, then you need to be able to react to it. And so, even I think if you're somewhat mentally distracted and talking, as long as your vision is paying attention to the road, the likelihood of having accidents is probably a lot reduced. But you should never text and drive. I did not confirm that.
How much voice operated input is distracting people?
I don't know if another person has to
think about whether this voice command is really understood by the system, and where your input is, and how the system understood your answers. And
well, ideally, you're building a system that works really, really well. So, you know, I think that
sometimes
we're making really good strides. I was actually, you know, I was a huge skeptic of voice for many, many years. I've been really impressed with the technology that our Tell Me team has created. They're the same team that does the speech input work for the Kinect system, and you know, they can understand a lot of dialects and a lot of different languages, and you know, they're constantly doing their own refinements and learning from that. So, you know, I think it's good now. Is it perfect? No, but is anything perfect? You know, so they're going to keep making it better, and I do expect very soon for it to be, you know, almost flawless. You know, I think a lot of the challenges were like quality of the microphones that you could get in these products, and how well they could, you know, translate the data with all the ambient noise and stuff, and all of that's improving at light speed. So yeah, it'll get there. I think sooner than I think.
Actually, it was so many questions about this thing. It's a Drake language, as far as I understand.
Yes, this is the main design instrument. It always reminds you not to step on it once again. Every designer should remember about it.
Yeah, and actually in the Russian language it's the same word, but it's like, yeah, it's like making errors again and again.
I think it's the same as in all languages. Everybody where people grab some leaves, that you have this kind of mistake, and they step on it from time to time.
Did you have any moments like that in your design?
Where we stepped on the rake more than one time?
Yeah. Maybe in your.
Oh, I'm sure we did.
I do. Yes, I do. Very often.
So
I had all the bugs on the forehead.
And you specifically live here in the room, just people remember about that?
Yes. All the clients should see that.
Make sure it's not just a hit over the head.
And the one thing that people trying to go further and further, and you can have this discussion, is like, okay, the touch interface is understandable. What about the the thing that, for example, Kinect is using is without any controllers and devices, just a hand.
It's absolutely great.
It's fun. Have you
used
it?
Yeah, it's really fun.
The question is, do you think it will be...
I've never seen people doing physical exercises for like 5 hours in a row. Before that, they could hardly leave the sofa. When I see Kinect, they can dance for 5 hours. So that's the main reason it's the really good thing. And I don't know how it can be implemented into something more serious than just gaming, but probably it will be. Maybe touch interfaces will be based on some Kinect architecture, and you will be just like using the air to navigate your way, not really touching the surface. You will be just like a music director, you will be just showing what you want, and then environment will understand that. That's probably one of the ways future will be.
And to finish this discussion, I want to ask you one simple question. For designers who are interested in this and looking for us, what should you recommend to designers right now to learn or to do to be successful in the design industry in 5 to 10 years? What they should do right now to be successful in the future?
My advice is to read books.
Any particular suggestions, any place to go and find these books?
Books are usually sold in bookstores. I would definitely recommend that.
Or libraries.
It's really worth a try.
I think I would encourage them to just practice a new medium as much as they can, and don't take things for granted. Ask hard questions and challenge what's normal, and maybe you fail, maybe you're successful. You never know. But until you try and just play and have fun, and really embrace the process of design. It's not always about the output. A lot of it's about kind of how you get there.
So thank you very much for this discussion. I hope it's always available for those of you. And it's for
thank
sure.
You.
Thank
it
you.
Yeah,
it's fun talking to you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye.